Have you ever wanted a bit more positivity in how we talk about the agency business? Or maybe some fresh ideas for how you and your agency can thrive? If so, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Immortal Life of Agencies. This is the podcast that celebrates the visionaries and changemakers who are actively future-proofing our industry. You'll hear from the leaders who've been there, done that, and are happy to talk about the t-shirt, even if it's a bit grubby. Sounds good, right? In each episode, you can expect short, sharp conversations with some of the biggest, broadest, and deepest thinkers in our industry, and a bunch of practical takeaways that you can apply to your own agency today. So in short, expect untold stories of progress, always optimistic and never dull. Welcome to the show. So today I'm sitting down with Harjit Singh. He's the Global Chief Strategy Officer at McCann and McCann World Group. It's a really interesting conversation. It's about, I suppose, the profound impact of being yourself in an agency. So we talk about creativity. We talk about maintaining quality standards and maintaining the discipline required without lapsing into dogma and fixed points of view. We also talk about the dance that goes on between clients and agencies and how to lead that or be led by that, how to balance certainty and possibility in your conversations with clients. So we talk about the importance of being yourself and how Harjit has got over imposter syndrome and how he's progressed through the industry when there was no obvious playbook for him to follow. So really, it's all about celebrating difference and the impact that that makes on the work, on the client, and ultimately on the people that work in our industry. I hope you enjoy it. Harjit, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Robin. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm really excited about this conversation because we had our quick prep call. We went into all sorts of interesting places. We'll probably go to a completely different set of interesting places today, and I'm all the happier for it. One thing I would love to ask you about is something that you did say in our previous conversation. And this was, I suppose, we were riffing on the nature of creativity and about rigor. You referenced your dad and his career in the army. Tell me more about the connection between the army and creativity and dogma and discipline. Brilliant conversation, I thought.
I think I may remember bits of it because I may have referenced that in as part of a larger conversation. So many of my observations in retrospect, as you would imagine, because in the moment, you know, you don't really think like that. You know, some level of profound insight is always something that you have when you've had time to reflect on your experiences. It's always a retrospective experience. So I really say that with, that in mind, that one thing you do see, you know, that kind of exposure and upbringing teaches you is this idea of discipline and how to differentiate between discipline and dogma. And the two are not the same. And two, you know, they get confused because you think that discipline is just something you do irrespective. And that's when, you know, that's the dangerous thing, when discipline becomes dogma. And that just means it's mindless, it's repetitive, and there's very little room for anything that, you know, consequential in an incremental capacity. So I think that what I did learn is that creativity in retrospect requires discipline, but the enemy of creativity is dogma. So I think what we do have to realize is to be very mindful of what we mean when we talk about asserting and exerting discipline in this business. So discipline that leaves enough room for magic.
Draw a contrast for us. Where does discipline show up in a positive way, first of all, in the advertising industry?
Discipline shows up in a very positive way every time we make really good work, because really good work is rarely just a mindless exercise. When work is genuinely effective, it moves people, moves market, it's always a result of a premise that has been thoroughly researched. And when I say thoroughly researched, you see when intuition and rigor both play a role in figuring out what that premise should be. So it's never just one over the other. It's never just purely an act of intuition. It's backed by rigor. And similarly, it's never just binary zeros and ones. There's a lot of intuition that goes into it. So when you see the alchemy of intuition and rigor, that's when you see the magic of that discipline. You know, because the craft is born from discipline, because discipline really is having some level of a quality standard, knowing that this is exactly what we're after, and having some kind of an unwavering commitment to a standard and compromising early on in the process just because it's easy. But when you see the, it's the other thing, you know, Robin, when we were talking, I said, what I've learned is that what's true in life is true in advertising. And in life, sometimes our positive qualities, when you're overextended on them or when they're overextended, they become things we have to be mindful of. So for example, this, you know, when you have a very high standard and you expect a lot from yourself, well, you'd argue that's a positive quality. But when you, when that is overextended, that takes on the shape of being micromanagement, control freak, overly anxious, you know, all those things, anything can be, you know? So it's the same way. When you, when that thing gets overextended, then that becomes dogmatic. That this is just how it's going to happen. This is the only way. The solutions have to be architected and manifested and deployed. And I think that's what we have to be careful of, because on the one hand, we have to deliver certainty of success, because we're not here just to kind of like make stuff because we like them, like making things. It's also because it has a genuine objective attached to it. So we have to deliver work that offers a level of certainty. You know, clients want to know that they have the certainty to succeed through and with the work that we make with them. But at the same time, you have to balance certainty with possibility. You know, that's why creativity is so captivating, because it's able to offer both. And we have to be mindful of that, that how do you balance a sense of certainty with a sense of possibility and potential and excitement at the same time?
You know, I'm really interested in that, Harjit. So this balance between certainty and possibility, it's my mind immediately goes to, let's say you're presenting an idea to a client. It's the first time they've seen it. It's high stakes. There's a lot of money on the table. Their reputation is on the table. Their job is on the table. And you've got to get that balance exactly right. You've got to convince them that, you know, you're absolutely clear that this is the right direction to take their brand in. And at the same time, you can't do that in the constraints of safety, because there is an agenda to move things forward. You've been asked to explore the art of the possible. How do you strike that balance?
It's very simple. For me personally, you know, to not overthink it, I think what you have to understand is, to your point, there's a lot at stake. You know, these are, clients are investing dollars that they're accountable for in work and ideas that you're presenting. So they are placing a bet on what you think has the capacity to deliver the objectives that they've set out to deliver. I think you have to understand in the art of persuasion, it's a dance. Sometimes you have to start from a place of certainty. And, you know, this is something that wisdom and experience and empathy teaches you. At least that's been true for me. You know, it's a dance. It's no different. When you're dancing with a different person, you know exactly where and how to engage so that this is a truly enjoyable experience, one with a positive outcome, where both parties feel like they have had a good experience. So it's the same way. And you realize if a client is at the point where you realize ultimately what you want is for them to feel a greater sense of confidence and certainty in placing bets on your work. So that's what it is. And then in that case, sometimes people need to start from a place of precision and, well, that we have identified an addressable audience, for example. These people have the capacity to move your business this quickly, this scale, through these messages delivered in these kinds of ways. Sometimes you have to start there from a place of precision. And sometimes the whole idea is to start with a much more expansive narrative, because you have to start from a place of possibility and say, like, imagine if we could accomplish this. Because, you know, that, or you have to know that instinctively. And that happens when you're in love with the problem, when you're in love with what you're making, when you're absolutely convinced that what you've made has the capacity to be magical in the market. And that's when I think you know exactly, if you feel the work that you've made, you would know, do I have to lead from a place of possibility, or do I need to lead from a place of precision? Ultimately, you have to do both. But sometimes you just need to know where to lead from. That's true for me, you know, so that's what I've learned. And I think what I've learned from that also is that clients are very appreciative of it. Because sometimes, let's say you're working with a high penetration, very populist, a category that operates in that context. And the whole point is that we want to have a much more expansive discourse and culture on what role that category or brand plays. That's when you have to start from a place of possibility. Mm. You really do. And, because you have to have an understanding of what the widest emotional territory that you can credibly operate in, for example. Engaging in those kinds of conversations is a dance where you start from a place of possibility. On the other hand, when you have very finite and clear business objectives, that if we get people to do this thing one more time a week, we could make X billion dollars or million dollars or whatever, that you get those briefs as well. And I think you have to know, we're better off starting with a place of precision, because the client's going to be instantly reassured that you understand what the priorities are, and then kind of hold their hand through the conversation and the process, so that they can kind of arrive to a place of possibility with greater confidence.
I love that. I love this metaphor that it's a dance. And I'm really struck by the notion that this is something that you've learned through the course of your career. I suspect a lot of the listeners to this podcast will be sort of really digesting that metaphor and thinking about, well, you know, what's the brief behind the brief? What's the kind of emotional context that we're being asked? What's going on? What kind of category? What can I infer from the nature of this product, the nature of the brief, that allows me to understand how I might lead this dance with this client, whether it's in a new business pitch or whether it's with an existing client or so on. I'm keen to just kind of go back to sort of how you gained the wisdom of knowing that it's a dance and knowing how to deploy different dance steps in different, you know, when you hear different music, let's say. So just perhaps unpack a little bit for me how you came to realize that it was a dance. Maybe there were moments where you got things wrong before you knew that this was the case. Were there great people around you? How did you understand this metaphor?
I still get things wrong. we're all human. There's two, three things. It's not a very complicated answer, but I'll tell you what's worked for me. You know, I'm an innately curious person. And I think, which is why I love this industry so much, because it's a home for people like ourselves who are just open-minded and curious and just drawn to that energy. I'm also very, very observant. And I love thinking about how people think. So it's when you kind of are in touch with what you love about the world and about people and about what makes you you. When you have a level of self-awareness about that and you are able to love those things without apology, I think it places you in an immense position of strength to be very successful in this industry. And I think for me, what my experience has been, observing masters at work, masters of persuasion, how they do it. I'm going like, wow, they're very different in one meeting to the next with the same client. They're very different. So you learn the importance of context. You learn how to read a room. And you're like, oh, what is it? Because, you know, we're all human at the end of the day. Everyone's kind of showed up to that meeting and they've had their experiences that have happened before, thoughts, filters, ideas that, you know, they brought to that moment. What's it going to take to break through? You know, so you to be able to kind of be in tune with the vibe and to be able to catch the vibe in the room. I think that's a skill that you learn by paying attention. And so for me, I have learned like that. And also just being in very kind of intuitive in understanding when does a person or a client engage more positively and when are they giving you signals and signs that they're not okay with what you're presenting. They're not feeling as confident as you want them to. And that's when I learned, you know, early on that when you, like I said, what's true in life is true in advertising. I learned through my own experiences. Every time I'm in a place of doubt, for me, doubt was always just a request for more information. Mm. I've always felt that way, that every time I'm doubtful of something, reticent, hesitant, a bit unsure, when I've focused on that, meditated on that, dwelled on that, whatever, you know, like I said, self-awareness is so important. I've always found, you know, deep down, it's just whatever you want to call your inner self, your higher self, whatever, someone, I need more information to feel better about this, to feel more confident about making this choice. And that's when I think if you can pay attention to yourself, you can pay attention to everyone around you.
I think this is fascinating. So in amongst the executive coaching work we do, this comes up a lot. There is, I think, I don't think this is an unreasonable generalization, but I've certainly experienced it and a lot of the people that that I've worked with. We talk about imposter syndrome. We talk about, you know, leadership being lonely at the top, all that kind of stuff. And I think you put something really succinctly that factors into that. This set of what does doubt mean? And I think a lot of the time within agencies, we're conditioned to be, you know, we have to be the smartest person in the room because, you know, we're trying to lead the dance, if you like, in your situation, in your example. In that instance, doubt can be crippling. Doubt can be something which stops people in their tracks. It makes them think they're not good enough. It makes them feel, you know, like their work is shit, whether it's their leadership or their creative work or, you know, their, you know, data analysis, whatever their role is. And that's awful. That's an awful feeling to carry around with you. It's an awful thing to bring home to your family at the end of a busy day. So but it sounds like you're very different. It sounds like for you, doubt is, like you said, it's an indicator. It's your brain or your inner self or whatever you want to call it, requesting further information. There's nothing wrong, is what I'm hearing, in you saying to the client or to your boss or anyone else and saying, you know, I don't get that, or help me understand it better, or am I missing something? That feels massive to me. Have you always been that way?
I became that way quite naturally because every time I was in the company of someone I admired and looked up to, respected, you know, whether I was in their company or I read about them, I've always learned that in order to understand what they're saying, it's perfectly okay to say, well, I just need more information, you know. So for example, and I think that this thing has come to me personally again, it's a discovery. It's been a discovery for me. My nature, what I learned very early on, and I say early on, I think in my late 20s and early 30s, I learned to make friends with all these feelings because I realized, you know, they're coming from me. So I can't sit on one hand and feel confident about the fact that I'm a person of above average intellect or that I'm good at what I do or that I have a good creative instinct and that I have good taste and well-edged. You can't think about yourself in those ways and then say, but I absolutely despise this. You know, that doesn't make sense. So I said, well, coming from the same source, this was my process. I'm telling you what mine was.
Sure.
And I spend a lot of time in my head, as it's becoming, I'm sure, obviously. I enjoy it. I really enjoy listening to my own self and reflecting. It's really important. I think in this industry, more so than any other that I would think, I think spending time and making friends with your thoughts and being able to kind of focus on what you're thinking and what you're feeling, observing them, interrogating those ideas and thoughts, it's really important. So what I learned were 2-3 things. Number one, they're coming from me, from the same place that I think positive things come from as well. So I'm not going to despise them and shun them. I'm actually going to allow them to sit at the table, if you will, and talk to them. They're all guests. They're showing up. Mm-hmm. They're coming to my dinner party. I used to always say, you know, I heard this album once, and I love that expression, and sort of, that was the trigger for me, actually. There's a singer, her name's Tanita Tikaram, and mm-hmm. she, I don't know if you know, she did a song called Twist in My Sobriety. She's...
I'm not going to try and sing it. You'll be pleased to hear.
She had an album called Feeding the Witches. I just loved that song so much. And I just thought that she's a poet. And she just talked about feeding the witches. And I'm like, oh, that's exactly what we all do. And so my thing was, you know, that kind of made me think that if they've come, they showed up at your banquet or your dinner party, I'm going to feed them too and understand what they have to say. They're just an interesting guest at that dinner party. So I made friends with all my thoughts. And then you realize that, okay, they're coming from you, so you can't possibly hate them. So you make them. Mm. And then the other thing was, and that's how I think this, I had this, it's just a request for more information. And I don't have to shun them or wish them away.
I remember hearing a sort of similar metaphor around anxiety, which I guess is a sort of the equal and opposite observation, I suppose, where when you don't listen to them, when you don't invite those thoughts and feelings to the, you know, to the dinner table and respect them and accept that they're part of you. So the metaphor was that effectively you have a pot on the stove when you hear the lid rattling on top because of all of the pressure that's building up inside. That's anxiety. And all of that anxiety is just not taking the lid off. It's not respecting what's going on inside the pot. I guess in this case, it's not respecting the fact that all of those thoughts and feelings are perfectly legitimate, and suppressing them isn't going to help. So it sounds like it's been a really important realization for you that those sentiments are their information, and they're pointing the way for you.
And they're valid.
Mm.
And they're valid. You know, you are valid. You know, your ideas are valid. And so your fears are valid as well. And I just think that if you can't interrogate your own thoughts and feelings and fears, how are we going to do that on behalf of people that we make work for? Because that's really the job here. You know, I'm a planner, and that's my job. So I learned to practice on people.
Well, I suppose of course that's your job, and I suppose a big part of that of your job is making sure that you know, you become more and more senior. You're global CSO of a global ad agency. There are a lot of people working for you, a lot of people that are looking to be inspired by you, a lot of people that are hopefully benefiting from a safe psychological space around you. So I guess this sort of level of self-awareness, I'm sure, has made it into your style of leadership, if I can call it that.
Mm-hmm.
So just, tell me a little bit more about perhaps how you're seen as a leader, or how you would like to be seen as a leader for the people in your teams.
I think it would be best to ask them.
they're not here.
They're not here. I do believe that you are exactly the leader you are as the human being you are. This is what my experience again has been. So I think that's very important. And if I like to believe and think that I do, I know it sounds trite, but it's not really, like, just show up as yourself. If you show up in a way where you are kind to yourself and you are interested in yourself and you're not judgmental about your thoughts and ideas, you will show up with the same capacity to be that way for those around you. And, you know, if you are led by vision, you will lead with vision. If you are led by ambition, you will lead with ambition. And if courage...
What are you led by?
Ambition and vision. Those are things that I'm led by. And courage, that's a value that you hold dearly, then you will inspire that in others as well. So that's really what I mean. I think to be good in advertising, you have to be good at life. And that's really what my belief and experience has been. And to be a good leader, you just have to be a good person, a good human being, and very much in touch with what it is that makes you you. Because when you have that level of understanding and empathy and the ability to like that about yourself, you can find ways to be that way for others as well. Because leaders have to be those that create more leaders. Leaders are here to create more leaders. Leaders are here to put people in touch with their capacity to be more, do more, and see more. You know,
I'm struck by the compassion that I hear in this, and I think fundamentally the compassion for yourself. There's a real sense of acceptance of who you are, and obviously we've talked about thoughts and feelings being legitimate and welcome and informative of the situations you're in. And when you've talked about others, I'm reminded of that phrase, how you do anything is how you do everything. showing up as yourself and recognizing that you are enough, and that it's really not for you to worry about what other people think of you, that, you know, it's none of their business, none of your business what people think of you. That strikes me, you're very good at being yourself. Is that fair?
I guess so, yeah. Very good at being myself, because what else, how can I be better at being anyone else? Better at being myself. Because you can't be anyone else. That for me is really important. And you realize that, you know, and I think there are some realizations you have in life that help catalyze that learning for you, if you will. So for example, learning to be yourself, you realize if you don't have role models that are like you, then you really don't have a playbook. And that's a blessing in so many ways. You know, you can sit there and say, oh, there's no one like me. It's been really hard. navigate the industry in a way that I may have had to or whatever. But you realize that, oh, actually, then you get kind of right you're on.
Is that what happened to you?
Well, yes. You know, I mean, like, it's not just me. Many like me. I'm not the only one, but many like me have had to kind of navigate the industry from a very self-referential point of view, because that was a necessity at the time. Because you can't be like anyone else, because you're not like everyone else. You're never going to look like them, talk like them, think like them, be seen like them, or be accepted like them. It's just futile to even try. So you learn that through trial and error, by the way. That is when you learn that when one day and you're like, well, the only game is my own. The only thing that I have to center myself around is myself. So, you know, how do you center around self and be self-centered in the most positive sense of the word? So I think those are things that happen, and then you embrace them, and then you become them. The other thing is, you know, you spoke about imposter syndrome, and you realize that actually that doesn't apply to you. And that's a huge breakthrough.
At
being best at being yourself. Because here's the thing about imposter syndrome. Again, something I learned late in my career. I think I might have been just in my late 30s or early 40s, I imagine. You know, I'm 50 years old now. So I must learn this. At that time, what, 10 years ago, I had this moment, Robin, just like talking about imposter syndrome. And I thought, well, the whole thing about the fear of not fitting in, isn't it? It's like, I don't belong, or I won't belong.
I'll get found out. I'm not good enough.
I don't belong here. I don't fit in here. For me, that was how I understood it. And then I went like, oh my God, isn't it bizarre to be afraid of not fitting into a place or a space that was actually never created with you in mind in the first place? How can you be afraid of it? So you should just set yourself free. And that is massively liberating, because then you realize, okay, well, I don't have to deal with that. So I just have to kind of focus on myself and do what feels right to me from my values, my experience, my wisdom, my instinct, and lead with that. And I feel like that just kind of, then you find your style more quickly. You find your voice more quickly. It becomes quite palpable. Because if you are different already to start with in this business, you're already positioned for success, because this whole business is about placing a premium on a point of difference for brands.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't we do that on people? So I think a lot of times people feel like, oh, I'm just not like them. So maybe that's a bad thing. But I think it's a really good thing. So if you can kind of like that about yourself and use that to propel yourself forward and find yourself, that really then kind of like makes the learning curve and the trajectory that much faster.
And so when you had that realization, Harjit, when that, you know, as you said, you didn't have a playbook, you were always different. You had to sort of design your own journey, if you like.
I did try not doing it before. I mean, you don't enter the industry thinking you're like this, because that obviously doesn't happen. Like I said, through trial and error. Yes.
Of course. Yes. Of course. But it sounded like something happened, as you say, around, let's say, late 30s, early 40s, where it unlocked something for you. What changed for you then at that point?
I think a lot of it is maturity. A lot of it is, you know, the more you reflect on your experiences, it's important. You know, I spend a lot of time on planes. Been like that for me. I've always had global roles in some shape or form for most of my career. So I've always spent a lot of time on plane. Those are moments where you can actually reflect on your experiences. For me, that's really a moment to think and reflect. And I think some of it just comes from there, where you pay attention to yourself and what you're experiencing and what you're thinking.
This seems to me like a real strong argument for mindfulness, almost like career mindfulness, really understanding about who you are and the place within the system that you find yourself, and not being constrained by any perception of rules or can-dos or shouldn't-dos or, you know, we sort of talk about ourselves as an industry full of misfits and left-field thinking and, you know, outliers. And I suppose at the same time, we have to make sure that that's true. We all have a responsibility to bring our individuality into that enormous jigsaw puzzle. And I guess it's easier said than done for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. And I it shouldn't be. Because I think for me, what's helped me is just simplicity and common sense, really, to embrace that. So one day, this is just another reflection. I'm like, God, I don't remember the last time. I don't think I've ever been in a meeting where a client came in and said, we'd like to make work that looks just like everybody else's. never happened. I've been in the industry for 28 years, so I haven't experienced that yet. So don't know. You know, I have to say, never say never. So I haven't had that. Then I realized that, I've never really been in a meeting where you haven't won something. And when you interrogate, what could we have done better? What could we have done differently? And it's like, the other people, they just made us think more. We were more, it was more provocative. And it even made us a bit more uncomfortable. It made us confront our held beliefs, let's say. And it forced us to think about the solution in a more expansive or different way. So basically, it did disturb to some degree what the held construct might have been. And then you realize, surely then, if you don't want to make work that's just like everybody else's, then you have to make work that's different. You can't do different, make different, if you don't think. And you can't do that if you haven't had different experiences, references, ideas. And, so much of that comes from your identity and your references and your lived experiences. So that just kind of like, it was one thing to another, and it's like a set of dominoes that kind of goes tick, tick, tick in your head, and you realize, this makes sense, this makes sense, this, so that, so that, so that, so that, and aha. So actually, let's just really celebrate the fact that, if people aren't like every other person, we should just absolutely celebrate that and embrace that, because that's exactly what this business needs. This is the business of placing a premium and delivering a premium from different. And you can't do different if you're not different in the first place. So this for me was very liberating, because I spent a big part of my career trying to fit in, and I wanted to be just like what I thought I had to be like. And I just feel like it's so futile. It's just so futile. I felt like, am I going to work or am I going to a Halloween party? Like, what am I going as someone else?
Wow.
So, that's when you go like, well, then I'm going to change. I'm going to pivot. And to pivot without shame. Because, there's that whole thing. Maya Angelou, she's my favorite. She always says, when you know better, you do better. And now I know better, so I'm going to do better. When you know different, you do different. So,
I think that's such a positive note. This, for me, has been a fabulous conversation about the importance of being yourself. And I suppose the collective impact on agencies and on our industry as a whole, if we all show up and be ourselves. Some of us who look and sound very much like, the majority of the industry at present, some of us who look and sound different to the majority of the people in the industry at the moment. We all have a responsibility to listen to ourselves and to respect the feelings and the experiences that we have and the validity of those things and the impact of them ultimately on doing, creating more difference for clients in a way that, it's good for them and good for us and good for the industry. Let me ask one last question of you, Harjit. I think I'd love to get a sense from you on, having been through a career path where you've spent some time fitting in, you've had to, as you say, sort of figure out your own playbook, and you've reached a point, I think, of great wisdom and great self-understanding. What advice can you give to other agency leaders or perhaps emerging agency leaders just to help them create the kind of environment where the journey through the industry for the people that follow them is perhaps easier than it could have been?
It's a very, very profound and interesting question. And the reason I paused, because I thought such a profound question deserves an equally profound answer, and I was searching for it. But what I'm drawing instinctively is a very simple one. So I'm going to share that in spirit of being honest and authentic with myself. I'm going to share the card I drew versus make something up. And for me, that is exactly what I said. I just think that we have to get better. Well, better at life will make us better leaders. What I mean by that really is being, I think we all know what the right thing to do is. I really do believe this. Every human being knows deep down what the right thing is to do to be a better human being. I really believe this. There's unshakable belief in that because we know that. Have the courage to do that and do that consistently. You know what the right thing to do is. So let's just become better human, better at being better humans. It's really that. I can't draw to say anything more complicated or whatever, because this is really when I drew from myself, like, what is the answer to that? We know instinctively, especially if you're an agency leader or you're an emerging agency leader, you've had the benefit of life experiences, wisdom, observation, exposure. You've had that to some degree. You know what the right thing to do is. You know what's based of that. Of the space where those choices are, even if you don't know precisely what the exact thing is, you know the space.
Yeah.
So go there and do that with conviction and have the courage to do it consistently. I think that's what I would say.
I love it. I love it. Harja, you have such a like a crisp turn of phrase. It's going to be a massive pain in the ass for us to work out what to call this podcast. The title has so many options in here, but the notion of being different in order to do different, recognizing that we as an industry create a premium for our clients through difference, I think is really powerful. And the very notion of just like the beating heart of that sentiment is about just being great humans. Everything else stems from that. I think that's a wonderful, optimistic, and such an accessible note of optimism for us to leave on. So Harja Singh, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You're so welcome. I've loved every bit of it. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening today. Hopefully you've got at least one really useful takeaway. If so, I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me, Robin Bon, on LinkedIn, or drop me an email at robin.bon@codefinery.com. Now, it's podcast law that I compel you to subscribe to the show, so please do. And if you're happy to share this episode and help us reach a wider audience, thank you. I'll personally buy you a pint. Finally, if you're new to Codefinery, then here's the plug. We combine consulting sprints and executive coaching to help agencies like yours create your very own market of one. That means you can stand out, win more, and command a premium, all while attracting the best talent and really thriving in your role. So if you're curious to learn more, drop us a line by the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.